Well, it's just not fair. It wasn't fair that just because I was a boy, I always had to mow the lawn. But I still then had to take turns washing the dishes with my two sisters. That's not fair. It's not fair when some people get all the breaks, while others just seem to get broken. It's not fair when someone we love dies too young. Why do some people live long and healthy lives eating chicken fried steak and French fries, while others die young, even though they've exercised and ate health food most of their lives? It's not fair. Then, as we saw in our first reading today, when God is finally going to give the Israelites what they truly deserve, God lets Moses talk him out of it. Then in our second reading, we're all reminded of how Jesus gave a mass murderer named Saul what he truly deserved, right? Of course. Jesus made him one of the most powerful witnesses, one of the most influential apostles of all time. That's not fair, is it? But you know, brothers and sisters, for all of our concerns over what is fair or what is not fair, or what is deserved or what's not deserved, have you ever noticed that Jesus never commands us, never even recommends to us, or never even so much as suggests that we should waste a minute of our time over whether or not anything in life is fair or deserved? Jesus demonstrates to us by all his actions and in all his parables and all of his teachings that God will go to any lengths, that God is willing to break all the rules of proper conduct. He doesn't care if he looks like a fool, or even if everyone thinks that God's wasting all of his time on some worthless penny, or risking too much for one little lamb. Jesus' life message shows us that what is fair or what is deserved makes no difference at all to a parent whose arms are aching to hold once again the lost child that they love. Consider this. We glanced out the window occasionally while we cleaned up the supper dishes, keeping a careful eye on our 3-year-old son as he chased his grandparents' dog around the grassy yard nestled at the edge of the woods. Suddenly, he was gone. Ed and I ran outside calling, expecting him to answer at any moment. We were not overly disturbed. It had only been seconds since we had last seen him. But seconds turned into minutes, and the irritation turned to apprehension. 10 minutes later, we called the police. Seconds after the fire department and the police arrived, the fire chief organized the searching into a long line, each only a few feet from one another, as they moved forward into the woods. A camera crew from the local news station set themselves up in the driveway. I listened in a daze as a commentator talked to a camera about a 3-year-old boy in an orange jersey and jeans who was presumed lost in the woods on Bishop Hill. I began checking out the woods across the street where no one else had gone. Would John cross the street? He knew he wasn't supposed to leave the yard either. Suddenly, I was furious and promised myself that he would stay in his room for a month if we found him. If we found him. As the minutes stretched into an hour, my anger turned to fear and I began to bargain with God. I told God I would be such a good mother. I would never yell again if only God would save my son. I returned to the yard to find the chief calling in the searchers. It was growing dark and they couldn't be able to do any more until morning. He held up a little muddy shoe as the cameraman moved closer. It had been found at the edge of the swamp bordering the lake, far behind my parents' home. There had been footprints in the mud going into the water, but none coming out. The fire chief explained gently that they would drag the lake in the morning. Before the significance of his words sank in, there was a shout from the edge of the woods. It was Ed. He came running toward me with our son in his arms. Sisters and brothers, anyone who knows what it's like to lose a child, even if it's only for a short time, understands the shepherd who took a considerable risk to find that one lost little lamb. Or the woman who swept and swept for one small, seemingly insignificant coin. Or the father who asked for no explanation, no promises, or no act of sorrow. Because loving parents know that when that child is found, there's no room for anything but joy. Jesus tells us that there will be more joy in heaven over one little lost child who returns than over 99 who hang around working and waiting for their fair share of the inheritance. You see, we like to earn things, don't we? After all, it's only fair. But you see, an inheritance cannot be earned. It can only be learned and humbly received. An inheritance cannot be earned. It can only be learned and humbly received. Brothers and sisters, God's incredible love for God's children knows no bounds. Have you ever noticed what Jesus does not say in his parables? The lost sheep is not told, "Now, if you get lost again, you're headed for the barbecue." The coin is not told, "If you get lost again, I'm not going to look for you." And finally, the prodigal son is not told, "Now, if you wander off again, don't bother coming back." God's love compels him to seek out his lost children over and over and over again. No matter how many times we wander off and get lost, God will stand at the door, straining his neck, hoping to see some sign of the slightest willingness to return. So finally, let's consider to what great lengths God is willing to go to bring back his loving children into his waiting arms. Maria and her daughter Christina lived in a modest house with dirt floors and used pallets for their beds. Maria's husband had died when Christina was a baby. So the young mother got a job and set out to raise her daughter. Now, 15 years later, the worst years were over. Although Maria's salary as a maid afforded few luxuries, it was reliable and it did provide food and clothing. Now Christina was old enough to get a job and help out. But Christina had different ideas going through her mind. She often spoke of going to the city. She dreamed of trading her poor little house and dusty neighborhood for exciting avenues and city life. Maria was always quick to remind Christina of the harsh streets. She told her young daughter, "People don't know you there. Jobs are scarce and life can be cruel. And besides, if you went there, what would you do for a living?" Maria knew exactly what Christina would do or would be forced to do for a living. That's why her heart broke when she awoke one morning to find her daughter's bed empty. Maria knew where her daughter had gone. She also knew what she must do to find her. She quickly threw some clothes in a bag, gathered up all the money she had, and ran out of the house. On her way to the bus stop, she went into a drugstore, sat down in the photograph booth, and spent all she could on pictures of herself. With her purse full of small black and white photos, she boarded the bus to the city. Maria knew Christina had no way of earning money, so she began to search in bars, hotels, nightclubs, any place with a reputation for streetwalkers and prostitutes. And at each place, she left her picture taped on a bathroom mirror, tacked to a hotel board, fastened to the corner phone booth. And on the back of each photo, she wrote a note. Well, it wasn't too long before both money and pictures ran out, and Maria had to go home. The weary mother wept as the bus began its long journey back to her small village. It was a few weeks later that young Christina descended the hotel stairs. Her young face was tired. Her brown eyes no longer danced with youth, but spoke of pain and fear. Her laughter was broken. Her dream had become a nightmare. 1,000 times over, she had longed to trade these countless beds for her secure pallet. Yet the little village was in too many ways too far away. As she reached the bottom of the stairs, her eyes noticed a familiar face. She looked again, and there on the lobby mirror was a small picture of her mother. Christina's eyes burned. Her throat tightened as she walked across the room and removed the small photo. Written on the back was this compelling invitation. "Whatever you have done, whatever you have become, it doesn't matter. Please come home." She did. Brothers and sisters, you and I are God's images, God's pictures, as it were. Whether we're sitting in a classroom, standing in line at a grocery store, traveling on a plane, driving our car, or just living at home, we are God's pictures, God's messengers. What message does God's beloved children see written on us? An angry cry, "It's not fair," or "I don't deserve this." Or will they find God's loving invitation instead? Whatever you have done, whatever you have become, it doesn't matter. I love you. Please come home. Come home.